2. Pip's hands hovered over the keyboard as she strained to listen to the commotion downstairs. A crash, heavy footsteps, skidding claws, and unrestrained boyish giggles.
Josh, why is the dog wearing my shirt?
Pip's dad shouted, the sound floating upstairs. Pip's snort laughed as she clicked to save her capstone project log and closed her laptop. It was never quiet once her dad returned from work. Downstairs, Pip found Josh running from room to room, kitchen to hallway to living room on repeat, cackling as he went. Close behind was Barney, the golden retriever, wearing her dad's loudest shirt, the blindingly green patterned one he'd bought during their last trip to Nigeria. The dog skidded elatedly across the polished oak in the hall, excitement whistling through his teeth. Bringing up the rear was Pip's dad in his gray Hugo Boss three-piece suit, all 6.5 feet of him, charging after the dog and the boy, laughing in wild bursts. Oh my God, I was trying to do homework, Pip said, restraining a smile as she jumped back to avoid being mowed down. Barney stopped for a moment to headbutt her shin and then scampered off to jump on Victor and Josh as they collapsed together on the sofa.
Hello, Pickle,
her dad said, patting the couch beside him. Hi, Dad. You were so quiet, I didn't even know you were home.
My Pipsicle, you are too clever to recycle a joke.
She sat down beside them. Josh started excavating his right nostril, and Pip's dad batted his hand away.
How were your days, then?
Her dad asked, setting Josh off on a graphic spiel about the soccer games he'd played earlier. Pip zoned out. She'd already heard it all in the car when she picked Josh up from practice. She'd only been half listening, distracted by the way the replacement coach had stared at her, uncertain, when she'd pointed out which of the 9-year-olds was hers and said, I'm Josh's sister. She should have been used to it by now, the lingering looks while people tried to work out the logistics of her family. Victor, the tall Nigerian man, was evidently her stepfather, and Josh her half-brother. But Pip didn't like those words. Those cold technicalities. The people you love weren't calculated, subtracted, or held at arm's length across a decimal point. Victor was her dad, who'd raised her since she was 4 years old, and Josh was her annoying little brother. Her real father, the man who lent the fits to her name, died in a car accident when she was 10 months old. And though Pip nodded and smiled when her mom would ask whether she remembered the way her father hummed while he brushed his teeth, or how he'd laughed when Pip's second spoken word was poo, she didn't remember him. But sometimes remembering isn't for yourself. Sometimes you do it just to make someone else smile.
And how's the project going, Pip?
Her dad turned to her as he unbuttoned the shirt from the dog. It's okay, she said. I'm just researching at the moment. I did go to see Ravi Singh this morning, though.
Oh, and?
He was busy, but he said I could go back on Friday.
I wouldn't, Josh said in a cautionary tone.
That's because you're a judgmental, prepubescent boy who still thinks little people live inside traffic lights. Pip looked at him. The Singhs haven't done anything wrong. Victor stepped in.
Josh, try to imagine if everyone judged you because of something your sister had done.
All Pip ever does is homework.
She swung a cushion into Josh's face, and her dad held the boy's arms down as he squirmed to retaliate, tickling his ribs. As Pip watched them play fighting, she couldn't help but wonder whether the Singhs ever laughed like that anymore. Or the bells. Maybe laughter was one of the very first things you lost after something like that. Pippa Fitz Amobi, July 31st, 2019. Capstone Project Log, Entry 2.
What happened next in the Andy Bell case is hard to piece together from the newspaper reports. So I have to fill in the gaps with guesswork and rumors until the picture becomes clearer. Hopefully, interviews with Ravi and Naomi, who was one of Sal's best friends, will help. According to what Angela said, the police would have asked for details about Andy's friends early on, presumably after taking statements from the Bell family. After some serious social media stalking, it looks like Andy's best friends were two girls named Chloe Birch and Emma Hutton. Liked by Emma Hutton, Sal Singh, and 97 others. View 6 more comments. Emma Hutton. Oh my God, Andy, stop being so gorge. Chloe Birch. I wish I didn't have to be in pics with you. Give me your face. Andy Bell. No. Wink emoji. Emma Hutton. Andy, let's take a nice one at the next calamity. Need new prof pic. Smiley face emoji. This post was from almost 2 weeks before Andy disappeared. It looks like neither Chloe nor Emma lives in Fairview anymore, but I'll message them to see if they'll do a phone interview. Chloe and Emma did a lot on that first weekend, April 19th and 20th, to help spread the Connecticut State Police's Twitter campaign, #FindAndy. I don't think it's too big of a leap to assume that the police contacted Chloe and Emma either on the Friday night Andy went missing or the next morning. What they said to the police, I don't know. Hopefully, I can find out. We do know that police spoke to Andy's boyfriend at the time. His name was Sal Singh, and he was attending his senior year at Fairview High, along with Andy. At some point on Saturday, April 19th, the police contacted him. Detective Richard Hawkins confirmed that officers had questioned Salil Singh as to his whereabouts the previous night, particularly the period of time during which it is believed Andy went missing. Friday night, Sal had been hanging out at his friend Max Hastings' house. He was with his four best friends, Naomi Ward, Jake Lawrence, Millie Simpson, and Max. Again, I need to check this with Naomi next week, but I think Sal told the police that he left Max's around 12:15 a.m. He walked home, and his father, Mohan Singh, confirmed that Sal returned home at approximately 12:50 a.m. Note, the distance between Max's house, Cortland, and Sal's, Grove Place, takes about 30 minutes to walk. The police confirmed Sal's alibi with his four friends over that weekend. Missing posters went up. House-to-house inquiries started on the Sunday. On the Monday, 100 volunteers helped the police carry out searches in the local woodland. I've seen the news footage, a whole ant line of people in the trees, calling her name. Later in the day, forensic teams were spotted going into the Bell residence. And on the Tuesday, everything changed. I think chronologically is the best way to consider the events of that day and those that followed, even though we, as a town, learned the details out of order and jumbled. Mid-morning, Naomi Ward, Max Hastings, Jake Lawrence, and Millie Simpson contacted the police from school and confessed to providing false information. They said that Sal had asked them to lie and that he actually left Max's house around 10:30 p.m. on the night Andy disappeared, not 12:15 a.m. I don't know for sure what the correct police procedure would have been, but I'm guessing at that point, Sal became the number one suspect. But no one could find him. Sal wasn't at school, and he wasn't at home. He wasn't answering his phone. It later came out, however, that Sal had sent a text to his father that Tuesday morning, though he was ignoring all other calls. The press would refer to this as a confession text. Tuesday evening, one of the police teams searching for Andy found a body in the woods. It was Sal. He had killed himself. The press never reported the method by which Sal committed suicide, but By the power of small-town rumor, I knew, as did every other student at Fairview at the time. Sal walked into the woods near his home, took a huge dose of sleeping pills, and placed a plastic bag over his head, securing it with an elastic band around his neck. He suffocated while unconscious. At the police press conference that night, there was no mention of Sal. The police only revealed the information about security footage placing Andy driving away from her home at 10:40 p.m. On Wednesday, Andy's car was found parked on a small residential road, Monroe. It wasn't until the following Monday that a police spokeswoman revealed the following. As a result of recent intelligence and forensic information, we have strong reason to suspect that a young man named Salil Singh, aged 18, was involved in Andy's abduction and murder. The evidence would have been sufficient to arrest and charge the suspect had he not died before proceedings could be initiated. Police are not looking for anyone else in relation to Andy's disappearance at this time, but our search for Andy will continue unabated. Our thoughts go out to the Bell family and our deepest sympathies for the devastation this update has caused them. There's sufficient evidence. They found Andy's phone on Sal's body. Forensic tests found traces of Andy's blood under the fingernails of his right, middle, and index fingers. Andy's blood was discovered in the trunk of her abandoned car. Sal's fingerprints were found around the dashboard and steering wheel, alongside prints from Andy and the rest of the Bell family. The evidence, they said, would have been enough to charge Sal. But he was dead, so there was no trial and no conviction. No defense, either. In the following weeks, there were more searches of the woodland areas in and around Fairview, searches using cadaver dogs, police divers in the river. Andy's body was never found. The Andy Bell missing persons case was administratively closed in the middle of June 2014. 18 months later, a court order was filed, and Andy Bell was declared dead in absentia based on the circumstances surrounding her disappearance. Andy Bell's death certificate was issued. Despite her body never having been located, she has now been legally declared dead. After the ruling, the district attorney said, "The case against Salil Singh would have been based on circumstantial and forensic evidence. It is not for me to state whether or not Salil Singh killed Andy Bell. That would have been a jury's job to decide." And even though there has never been a trial, no conviction by a jury, even though Sal never had the chance to defend himself, he is guilty, not in the legal sense, but in all the other ways that truly matter. When you ask people in town what happened to Andy Bell, they'll tell you without hesitation she was murdered by Salil Singh. No allegedly, no might have, no probably, no most likely. He did it, they say. Sal Singh killed Andy. But I'm just not so sure.